nobody warned me about this. When you change as a person, because I did change dramatically, the way I think, I carry myself, it triggered a lot of people that knew me for years. And I lost like three really good friends. Like one of them told me straight up, I can't be friends with you anymore. I was shocked, but she said, you're successful. And basically, it was triggering her.
Welcome to Becoming Better with Na'ama, the podcast that guides you on the journey to self-improvement and stronger relationships through effective language. I'm Na'ama, your host and a certified life coach specializing in partnerships and dating. Join me as we explore how to know yourself better, improve your communication skills, and navigate relationships by using better language. Remember to subscribe, share, and reach out with episode topic ideas at info@na'amasegal.com. That's info@na'amahsegal.com. As you know, words have incredible power, shaping our realities profoundly. I am living proof of that. In this series, we'll delve into the transformative influence of language, uncovering its impact on our subconscious and reality. Come along with me as we discover the magic of positive self-talk and the phrases that ignite real change. And now I want to thank BetterHelp for sponsoring this episode. This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. Hey y'all, it's Na'ama, and as Ted Lasso likes to say, I am a work in progress. Seriously, I know that I'm becoming better every day, but sometimes I'm also a mess. One of the most powerful tools that I've used over the last 20 years to become a little bit less of a mess is therapy. And if you need a therapist, which I think everyone does, you should go with BetterHelp. BetterHelp is the world's largest therapy service, and it's 100% online. With BetterHelp, you can tap into a network of over 30,000 licensed and experienced therapists who can help you with a wide range of issues. To get started, you just answer a few questions about your needs and preferences in therapy. That way, BetterHelp can match you with the right therapist from their network. Then, you can talk to your therapist however you feel comfortable, whether it's via text, chat, phone, or video call. You can message your therapist at any time and schedule live sessions when it's convenient for you. If your therapist isn't the right fit for any reason, which does happen, you can switch to a new therapist at no additional charge. How awesome is that? I believe that everyone can benefit from therapy, and you can benefit from 10% off your first month by going to betterhelp.com/becomingbetter. That's betterhelp.com/becomingbetter. Get yourself a therapist. They're just a fresh set of eyes to help you tackle any problem you want to overcome. I believe in you. And this is just another way that you can become better. Welcome back, everybody. I have an incredible guest today. This person is one of my role models. I have been following her on Facebook and social media for at least a year and noticing the work that she does to transform lives. And obviously, if you want to become better, you got to hang with people above you. So that is always my goal. And clearly, I have found somebody who can role model that. So I wanted to bring on, in the spirit of the words that we speak to ourselves and the spells we cast on ourselves, an amazing public speaker and coach, Gail Keyes Allen.
Yay! What a great intro. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, it's true. So, well, I want to dive right in. I have three big questions that I ask my guests on the podcast because I find them to be the most effective questions. So, the first one is I'm going to ask and then stop talking because I really want to give you the floor. I would love to know, what is your origin story? Meaning, for those of us who are not superheroes, what is it specifically that got you? Where did you start? How did you end up where you are? And if anything, you know, what words or phrases might have played a part in that? But just tell us about you.
Oh, that's a long story.
I'm sure it is.
I'll try to make it more condensed. When you said my origin story, The first thing that came to my mind was that I came from a strong Black woman. Like, my mama was a strong woman.
Amazing.
She was born in 1923,
Oof.
but
Oh my gosh.
she thought outside the box. So, my mom had four kids back to back, four kids in 4 years. I'm the oldest,
Oh my
yes.
gosh. Give that woman a medal.
Yes, she did. She had actually had two miscarriages before me. And then so when she had
Wow.
me, it was like, yay, I finally got one that made it.
Oh,
But
wow.
she was a rule breaker. So my mom, when I was around 11, decided to leave my dad for another man because they were having an affair.
Oh,
It's
wow.
a really interesting story, but I'll make it concise. But
I'm here for it.
we don't think about that stuff happening now because they didn't have social media. They didn't have all the things, you know, that we have now.
Yep.
But the man she was having the affair with was like her love of her life. And he had asked my grandparents, could he marry her? And they said no. They were from a small town and the family weren't like that. I don't know. Anyway, my grandparents said no. So
Okay.
because he came to them and so he broke up with my mom. She didn't know that her parents said no. And
Oh.
later he ended up marrying someone else. And my mom ended up marrying my dad. But then I guess love prevailed because literally, once my parents separated, I was 11. My mother and her boyfriend were together till she died. And she died at 86.
Wow.
And she was paralyzed for 9 years from a spinal cord injury
Oh my God.
in a nursing home. I have some crazy stories,
Sounds
but
like it.
he came to visit her regularly. He came, brought her flowers, candy, all the things, the holidays. And before my mom passed away, she had told me that she was ready to go. She was tired.
Yeah.
And I told her, it's okay,
Yeah.
which I'm surprised I even said that because I don't even know where it came from. But she said she wanted to go to the church that she belonged to, which was like an hour and a half away
Right.
from where the nursing home was. And I told her, you can't do that. You're paralyzed. How are you going to get there? Well, she told her friend, her boyfriend, he split up with his wife, whatever, but they never got married. They were together.
Okay.
She told him, and he hired a private ambulance, a private nurse, and had my mother at that church
Oh
talk
my
to the minister.
gosh.
They devoted that day to her name is Mary Keys, and they devoted that day to her. And
Wow.
probably 6 months later, she passed away.
Oh my
So I
gosh.
start with that story because that's what I come from. Like, I come from a strong woman who was paralyzed, but still smiling. Like,
And determined.
very determined. And
Wow.
so that's where my determination comes from. That's where my strength comes from. And when
Amazing.
things get tough, I always say to myself, what would Mary Keyes do?
Ooh.
And so things, I got married. I'll skip on. You know, I went to college, got
Great.
married. And I had a child that was born 14 weeks early. So I was 26 weeks pregnant when I had my daughter.
Wow.
Weighed
Wow.
2 pounds,
So,
one.
just to be clear for those who are not reproducing human beings, 14 weeks early is more than 3 months early, where there is so much development that the infant does not yet have. It is seriously questionable whether they will survive.
Oh, totally. They called
Wow.
me 2 times and said, your baby's dying, come
Oh
to
my
the hospital.
God. Oh my God. How
She
did
was,
you survive?
yeah, that's my whole point. Yeah. She was on a respirator, had chest tubes, all the things.
Oh
But
my gosh.
this girl was 35 years old now with a 4-year-old.
Oh my
So
gosh.
I got
Wow.
miracles in my house.
Yeah, you do.
So that's what I come from. I come from hard times, but lots of joy. I
Oh.
end up finding out my husband, I was married for almost 20 years. We were together 24. Found out he was having an affair.
Oh my
And
gosh.
yeah, she was living in our rental property.
Oh no.
I can laugh now.
I mean, obviously now because it's over. I hope it's over.
I was going to lose my mind at the time.
Oh yeah. And somebody might have lost their life. That's all I'm saying.
And I left out one piece that the year before that, I had a brain tumor, which
what?
I had surgery. I had back surgery for a herniated disc, and I had my thyroid removed. They thought I had thyroid cancer.
Oh my.
We've only been talking like less than 10 minutes.
Wait. Hold up. So you had life-changing surgery and a brain tumor, and the guy cheated on you with the person in your rental property? Oh my, okay. Wow.
From the TV talk show or something.
I know, wow. But here you sit anyway.
That's why I want people to know this, because there's somebody that's going to listen to your podcast that is going through something challenging.
Yep.
And I want them to know that they can survive.
Absolutely. I like to tell people that, you know, wherever you are, whatever's happening, you have a 100% success rating because you're still here.
Yeah.
Even if it's not the success that you wanted or the way that it looks the way that you wanted, you still have a 100% survival rate. And that's a huge accomplishment.
So,
wow, that's a hell of a story. How did you get into coaching as that is now what you do?
Yeah. I left my husband. We sold the house.
Rightly so.
I had this big, beautiful house in the suburbs, sold the house. And I literally went on a spiritual journey. Ooh. I don't know if you know who Iyanla Van Zandt is.
Oh, heck yeah. I love me some Iyanla. Oh, wow. Amazing.
Well, I went to my first spiritual retreat for a weekend with Iyanla in 1996. And that was before my divorce. And I think it was hard already getting through it. But what I learned and the support that I got working with her that weekend and her people helped me so much. And after that, I did some other courses with her. Actually, I've done two spiritual retreats with her. So I loved, she was kind of like the first coach I knew about, you know, mm-hmm. and then where I heard about coaching, but I didn't think that I could be a coach, even though I wanted to help women because I had been through so much. I knew that I had a lot to give. And literally it took me 12, 13 more years before I became a coach.
Wow.
Maybe more than that. Before I went through certification. And I went through certification during COVID.
Same.
So during over COVID, I was working from home and I decided to get certified. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of things that happen in between, but basically on my job, the job that I got after my divorce was as an accountant for a law firm. Because
you do not strike me as an accountant, ma'am. That is all I'm going to say.
No, it was not. You know why? You know why I took that job? Well, I have a degree in economics.
Oh my, and she has a degree in economics. Okay. There's so many layers here. I'm loving this.
But the thing about it is I wanted to be an artist and a writer growing up. And I was told, you won't make any money. You need to do something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've heard that.
So I majored in business and got a degree in economics and hated it.
The safe thing. Yeah.
Every minute of it. Yeah. I did take English courses and loved them, but I still didn't have the confidence to pursue it.
Yeah.
So I wasn't working after my brain tumor, but when I found out that my ex, it was literally like 8 months after the brain tumor.
Wow.
I got a job and I needed a job that paid well where I could take care of my daughter because here I am going to be a single parent.
Oh my gosh.
I stayed on that job for 16 years. 16 years.
You're committed.
That's the only job I ever committed to. I used to be a job hopper.
Interesting. Okay.
But I didn't hop because I needed some, I needed some stability.
Right.
As a single mom, I needed stability. And I
But that
didn't.
was a choice that made sense for you in the moment.
Right. Yes, totally. And I emotionally, I felt like I lost everything. I had to start all over again.
Oh, yeah.
So the job brought stability.
Right.
I didn't. I mean, I was grateful for it,
right.
but it wasn't me.
Of course, it sounds like it. So then you were doing that 16 years and then you switched and became a life coach.
Right. So over COVID, I started getting coached a lot myself. And this is what how I made the decision to get certified. I got coached by someone and I told her that I really wanted to get certified, but the school that I wanted to get certified by at the time cost $18,000.
Whoa.
Yes. And I told her, I said, I'm getting older. I can't justify spending $18,000 on a certification.
Yeah, no kidding.
She said, what if your certification and your business was your retirement plan? That's what I said.
Ooh, okay.
And she was older. She had retired from teaching. Certified. So I think she was like in her early 70s.
Wow. That is a reframe of reframes. Hello.
Yes.
Wow.
And when she said that to me, I was like, done. Put out of my 401k and paid payments on the other half and got certified over COVID and went through all the mind drama. While I was in certification, I was also in therapy because George Floyd had been murdered during that time.
I
And
remember.
I was in a cohort of, like, I'll just say it the way it is. Most of the women in there were wealthy white women in my cohort.
Awkward.
Yeah. And then I had to get coached every week. And then the thing that I want to get coached on is George Floyd and being Black and all the emotions, but don't feel safe getting coached in that container of strangers that I don't know that they would understand.
Yeah, it must have felt very foreign.
Oh, I felt like I was back in elementary school or something.
Like with the Mean Girls table, like
yes.
The clicky, blah, blah. Yep.
And actually, my instructor felt like a mean girl. So, yeah.
Did she make you wear pink on Wednesdays? Like,
no.
Gross. I remember that whole month, the month of May. It was horrific. And me being a white woman is, you know, but at the time in my corporate life before I became a coach, I also got certified during COVID. But I remember as soon as May rolled around, I had been doing work within my ERG, within the corporation, the employee resource group for the LGBTQ employees. And I got tapped by the African-American ERG to assist with a corporate-wide 60,000 employee program the month before of how to discuss Jedi in general. For those who don't do Jedi, it's justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. And how to discuss it in an environment that is predominantly dominated by white men, because it was the telecom industry. And then Mr. Floyd of blessed memory passed, and suddenly everyone in the C-suite was losing their minds. And they were like, you need to do this now. You need to do this now. We don't have any paperwork. We don't have any plans. We don't have any classes. Do it now anyway. And it was so overwhelming. And I was safe in my privilege. I can't imagine how awful it had been for you.
It was pretty bad. It was pretty bad.
So what was the outcome? Did you end up getting the certification that you wanted, that you spent so much money on?
I did. I mean, everybody was kind to me. It wasn't like someone was mean to me. They were kind to me, but in my mind, they couldn't relate.
Of course. Of course not.
And so I went in therapy, which was, I mean, I've been in therapy before, but it was, first, the other piece too is, my story is so crazy. My best friend died in April of COVID, and she was the first person I knew to have COVID. I've been friends with her since middle school.
Oh my gosh.
Actually, this month is the anniversary of her death.
Oh, may her memory be a blessing.
I just wrote on her Facebook page yesterday that I missed
Oh,
her.
man. It was such
Because
a hard
actually,
time.
yeah, it was really challenging. So I don't mean to be a downer, but I mean,
No, I love feeling the feelings. It's good. It's good.
that's my life, right? That's my life.
Now, for those viewers who have conveniently for or listeners who've conveniently forgotten that COVID was only 3 years ago, this amazing human in front of me has completely turned her life into something unrecognizable. Like, that is insane, y'all. So now you coach full time. What kind of coaching do you do? What's your niche?
I do money and business for midlife women. Mostly, I help women decide if they want to leave their jobs, and if they want to leave their jobs, help them build a coaching business. I'm leveraging their experience.
Oh,
And
nice.
so many women have issues around money that I've ended up talking more about money than business, actually. And I'm not a business coach that teaches a lot of strategy. You can learn all of that. The way that I work with clients is I help them become the person they desire to be. So this is more inside out,
Right.
changing from the inside, because I can teach you all the skills,
Right.
but if you don't believe you can do it, if you're afraid to show your face on social media,
Yeah.
if you are afraid to sell, you can't have a business.
Yeah. Yeah,
So
that's true.
to backtrack a little bit, I ended up quitting my job in 2021, May 20, in fact, it's almost that anniversary. May 2021. In 2022, I tripled my corporate salary,
Oh
which
my gosh.
blows my mind.
Oh,
But then in 2023, I was so burnt out, I like put the brakes on and had to slow it down and come back to me, because I realized that the way I made that money was so much like corporate. Felt like corporate. It was the energy of what the energy I had been in on my job. It was almost like I left one job and went to the other, but I was running it.
But you stayed in the same building.
The body, the building.
Yeah.
So last, and this is the other thing that happens, and nobody warned me about this. When you change as a person, because I did change dramatically, the way I think. I carry myself. I mean, I traveled a lot. I did a lot. I talked about money. It triggered a lot of people that knew me for years. And I lost like three really good friends. Like one of them told me straight up, I can't be friends with you anymore.
Wow. Okay.
I was shocked, but she said, you're successful, and it's trick basically it was triggering her. And she said she couldn't be happy for me.
Oh my, wow. So on the one hand, it's incredibly disappointing, and on the other hand, it's refreshing that she's being honest.
Yeah, right.
That's
But
very interesting. That's very interesting.
another one is a good friend from college. I met her when I was 19, but I'm not the same person.
Yeah, of course.
The things we d used to discuss, I don't talk about anymore. Like I really have transformed.
You've evolved.
I don't gossip about people, and I don't want to sit on the phone all day and blah 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 blah. And people don't like that, you
No.
know, because that's what they do.
Yeah.
But I can't be true to me and have and keep elevating,
Yeah.
live like that. So anyway, it pissed some people off.
I heard somebody say once that if you're not pissing somebody off, you're doing it wrong. So I just keep falling back on that. But I love, wow, what an origin story. Okay, so that's amazing. I would love to ask you my next question because it does segue in. I'm curious about what are some of the, again, because I'm obsessed with words. What are some of the words and phrases that you heard growing up that you carry with you still, for good or for bad, phrases that make sense or don't make sense that you realized, oh, wow, this is holding me back, or this is what I really needed to hear. Are there any special words or phrases?
I'm trying to think of a phrase. Like, okay, my mom, and I do think about this sometimes, she used to say, you're mad or you're sad, well, then scratch your ass and get glad.
Ooh, okay.
So in my house, you weren't really allowed to have emotions. It was almost like, we don't have time for this. Seriously.
I'm not laughing at you. I'm laughing at the idea that life is so short. Like, you have to evaluate whether you have the energy to have a feeling right now.
But then the damaging part of it is, I never was allowed to feel my feelings, and I didn't have words
right
to explore it or express it.
Yeah.
All I had was, I'm fine.
Fine.
I'm okay. I'm all right.
So did you find that phrase would immediately have you shut down?
Oh, totally.
Interesting. Totally. And so the reflex would be a different statement, which is, I'm fine.
Yeah. I spent many years shut down.
Wow.
Which I think a lot of people do.
Yeah, it's true.
And when I was in certification, part of how I coach has to do with, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
What are you thinking? How are you feeling?
Right.
I didn't have feeling words.
Yeah.
I still am. And most people don't. Like, true. Literally, true. You have to pull out a feeling wheel. And it's like, where?
I was just going to say that. If anyone needs a copy of the feeling wheel, check my social media and my website. I promise it'll be there for you.
Yeah. So that was really big for me to learn how to express my feelings, but then feel my feelings.
Mm.
So it's one thing to say, I'm disappointed or I'm frustrated or whatever, but how does it show up in your body?
Yes.
What do you do when you feel that way? Or what are you not doing when you feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
So that's been a journey that I'm still on. Sitting with the feeling, exploring the feeling. When I want some candy, why do I want candy? Do I want candy because I like the taste of chocolate, or do I want candy because I'm stressed?
So finding the feeling physically, somatically, and then pairing it with the emotion word.
Totally.
So it's interesting. There's actually a condition that defines what you're describing. I don't know if you've found it or not. It's called alexithymia. It is an actual thing. I can send you the spelling because it's Greek, so it's long. but it's called alexithymia, and it is literally the inability to articulate a feeling word with a body feeling, and sometimes just one or the other, or sometimes both together. Okay. And it tends to present more in men, and it tends to present more in the autism spectrum. But it is more of a socialized disorder, where if you have a culture with strong, emotionally intelligent people, it tends to present less. And so it can be incredibly difficult, because then you have all of these sensations that you may not even recognize exist because you're divorced from the neck down.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. But you think about it, like I said, my mom was born in 1923.
Yeah.
And neither one of my parents even graduated from high school. Okay. My dad left school when he was in the eighth grade. My mom left in the 12th grade, highly intelligent.
Right.
There were 8 kids, and she left school to help.
Yeah.
So
she did what she had to do.
I come from, a generation that's experienced a lot of trauma. They didn't know it was trauma. They didn't know that there's generational, we used to say generational curses.
Yeah.
And even my daughter asked me one time years ago, like, is our family cursed? Like, because there's been so many like crazy things when I start telling my story, and children, no, we're not. But I feel like what I'm doing and how I'm showing up now is changing the trajectory of my family.
I think you are absolutely right. I think you're, and it's amazing to me that you use the word curse, just because it's sometimes it not, maybe not as much now, but it used to be a ubiquitous term, you know, like my family's cursed, my love life is cursed, my career is cursed, my bank account is cursed. And yeah, it conjures up so much malevolence and so much darkness and so much powerlessness.
Totally.
When yeah, in reality, when we shift from curse to trauma, it takes the mystery out of it. Totally. And then you have the double-edged sword. It's a requirement that you participate in the resolution of that. Totally. And that's with a curse, you're like, oh, well, too bad.
Yeah.
It's out of my hands.
And I would say when I was younger, I definitely for a long time felt that way. That right, it was like, what can I do?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm born into almost.
Right.
We have so much say in the direction that our lives go.
Ooh, I'm writing that down.
Power in that.
Mm-hmm. 150%. We do. And I mean, we don't have any control over what's happened, but we do have control over what we do with it.
How we respond to what happened. Mm-hmm. We always have a choice in how we respond. I would say that even though a lot of crazy things have happened in my life, obviously I responded in a positive way.
Well, clearly. Clearly you have.
And did not give up. There's no quit in me.
You know, it sounds like that's something that you say to yourself sometimes. There's no quit in me. Totally. Is that one of those things that you say that helps you reframe?
Totally.
I love that. Because that was going to be my next question. What's some of the stuff that you use now?
And I will not give up. And this is the other thing I say too. I grew up in the church, but I am not a religious person, but I am very spiritual. And mm-hmm. we say, God saved me from so many things. Like mm-hmm. I told you all
miracles.
The story. And
miracles.
That's not even everything, right?
Right.
So I always say, if he did it before, he could do it again.
Yes, so exactly.
If I got over that hump, I can get over this one. If I got over that, if God stepped in, gave me grace, whatever, it will happen again. It will happen again. That's kind of like my mantra.
So if you had to put the mantra in a sentence, what would you say your sentence is? Because maybe there's someone out there who needs a mantra.
Yeah, what would the sentence be? I guess, like, when you're going through challenging times, use your past as evidence that you can survive because you're here today.
Oof. Use your past as evidence that you can survive.
Yes, because a lot of people want to use their past as evidence. They
I'm
can't.
Writing that down. Wow. Use like your past as evidence that you can survive.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because you're here.
Yeah, because you have a 100% success survival rating.
Yeah.
Amazing.
So a lot of times people say, well, this happened to me in the past and that happened to me. And what if it happens again? So what? You already, then you're an expert now.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So I have to tell you a funny, not funny, but an absolutely perfectly aligned story that goes with that. And it was, what is it? April now? Yes. So a year ago, I had a baby in March, and, you know, she was born. Thank God, healthy. Everything was fine. 3 weeks later, my husband, who was the primary breadwinner, lost his job. His company collapsed partly in response to the Silicon Valley Bank thing that happened that most people have forgotten about. And within 3 days, they laid everyone off, and we lost our health insurance. We lost everything. I have a 3-week-old baby who was born 2 weeks early, and we were distraught, and we immediately gravitated to our faith, and we prayed on solutions. And eventually, obviously, God took care of us. We ended up selling our home and moving to Ohio, and we found an amazing community, and people have been wonderful to us. And all in all, we've I don't want to say failed up, but like we collapsed and now we've built back better. So that to say that now, this past March, a month ago, after looking and looking and looking for a job, he finally got one in February and he was so excited and he was right around back the same income and everything. And because of a series of issues that had happened, it was the week anniversary of when he first lost his job. And then this second job, they let him go. And, you know, eventually we figured out what had happened and there was not a lot of solutions. So, you know, they parted ways, but literally I looked at him after I like was dumbfounded and my brain exploded. I looked at him and I thought, well, we've done this before.
Yeah.
So we know now what to do. Yeah. So that's a plus. Yeah. And you're completely right. Like every failure teaches us success.
Totally.
It's so amazing and it's so powerful, but it's a hard reframe.
Yeah. One of my mentors says that success is built on a pile of failures.
Success is built on a pile of failures. Oh, I'm writing that one down because that one is amazing.
Yeah. And it's true. You think about it. You cannot step out and do something different without failing.
Absolutely. I always expect to suck at everything first.
Right. But we all do.
Yep. We do. And you're so awesome. You just jumped through each of the questions I was going to ask you without even knowing. But I wanted to pick your brain a little bit in terms of you mentioned your mantra was using your past as evidence of why you can survive. And I think that's incredible advice. And I was curious, with the women that you coach, the women whose lives that you transform, are you using any of these phrases in your work? Are you using any like key terms or things that you notice that they bring to the table that you have to help them erase and replace with something better?
Well, I definitely talked about using the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that I tell almost every client is, until you fall madly in love with yourself, you are going to struggle, especially in business, but really in all of life. And that doesn't mean, and there's a difference between in love and love. Mm-hmm. So like I had one client say to me, well, I love myself, but I can't say I'm in love with myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would say most people bring to the table, that it's like, okay, I care about myself, whatever. But are you in love with yourself? And I use this as an example. If somebody,
yes,
like, people are afraid, like, to get online because they're like, what if somebody leaves a nasty comment? Or what if somebody calls me a name or whatever? And I'm like, okay, so what if they do? If you're in love with yourself, you would laugh it off. Mm-hmm. You would say, there must be something wrong with them because I am a fabulous, amazing person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm beautiful. I'm amazing. But when you aren't in love with yourself and you feel like you need to be fixed, you're going to play right into it.
Ooh. So for you, are you correlating being in love with yourself as not needing to be fixed, air quotes?
Totally. Totally.
I love that. So how would you define somebody who, like, could you give an example of what it means to be in love with yourself versus just loving yourself?
Yeah.
Other than the comment part.
All the way you treat yourself and the decisions you make all center around trusting and loving yourself. Because if somebody doesn't trust and love themselves, they make desperate decisions a lot of times.
Ooh, okay. That's a very strong word. What does a desperate decision look like, smell like, feel like?
Yeah, I call desperate decisions made from emotions. When you're so caught up in your head, it's like, shouldn't I? I don't know. What should I do? I'll make a list. Like I used to work with someone that would always make a list of pros and the cons and which one outweighs it. No.
What instead of just going with her gut?
Exactly. I was going to say intuition or your soul.
Yep.
Yeah. So that to me, I call it desperation moves. And I've made desperation moves.
Well, yeah, you're human. You're human.
Yeah.
It happens.
Right. But now that I know better, I do better.
Thank you, Dr. Angelou.
I didn't know, right? I didn't know. And so that's why I said in business, I don't teach a lot of strategy.
Right.
Like I'll teach you strategy, but then I will coach you through the resistance. Because what happens is when you give people strategy, a lot of times they don't want to do what's necessary to grow their business.
No, they don't.
No, it's uncomfortable.
Yep. And people don't like to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So you coach them to feel into the discomfort and you make a correlation between that and being in love with yourself.
Totally.
Because I love that.
Or in the love and the trust of yourself go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm. It does. It
when
does.
You love yourself, you trust yourself and you trust your decisions.
I agree with you completely. I have some worksheets that I give to my clients of tiny micro goals that they can create for themselves to practice trust, to create trust maybe where there wasn't ever trust before. Because I wasn't raised to trust any of my own decisions. I was raised to constantly second guess myself. So I would literally I coach people now to, you know, walk into a grocery store and turn left and be okay with the decision that you made and you turned left. What did you see? What did you notice? Who did you run into? And commit to that. Or what did you order for lunch? Know that you're ordering only what you wanted and that you're committing to that order, whatever it may be. And if it turns out it tastes like crap, tell the waiter and be brave and commit to that statement. And it's so scary for people sometimes.
I see that. But I practice those things naturally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't, for myself, I don't like getting too caught up in the same habits that keep me being the same old person.
Right.
Or in the same place, because it starts to feel boring and you start to feel stuck.
Yes.
And then people wonder why they don't like their lives. But I say, when you are bored and you're doing the same thing all the time, it's like having a EKG and you flatline.
Ooh.
Like your life is like, instead of like, and I usually draw for my clients. But when you don't go in the grocery store and just go a different way, or go to a different store that you
there you go. There you go.
Drive a different way than you normally go, right? I live in Maryland, right? I'm literally 30 minutes from DC and 30 minutes from Virginia.
Oh wow.
My daughter and I will hop in the car and go into Virginia to Whole Foods. There's a grocery store 5 minutes from my house. Mm-hmm. I can go there, which I do sometimes, but sometimes I'm like, let's go to Whole Foods or let's go to Trader Joe's. Why do I need to go to the same grocery store every time?
So you really believe strongly in forcing yourself into new and different circumstances and to glean whatever you can out of it.
Totally.
I love that. That's constant discomfort on a small scale. That's fabulous.
Totally. I've done that with myself for years. I will do things that are uncomfortable to keep growing.
Yes, that's the lobster story. That's the lobster. You know the lobster story with the vertebrae or the, what's it called? The exoskeleton?
No,
so so that's one of the metaphors that I heard a bajillion years ago. I don't know if it was Lisa Nichols, amazing, or, you know, any one of the motivational speakers I used to listen to, but the idea behind it is that lobsters, you know, they, you know what they look like. Obviously they've got a shell. And they are designed in a really interesting way. So their exoskeleton does not grow as they grow. It stays completely still.
Oh.
And eventually their inner body, their soft underbelly, so to speak, grows to the point where they're so uncomfortable that it triggers a hormone to force them to shed their exoskeleton, and then a new one grows.
Oh, I love that.
Isn't that so fascinating?
Dude, I love that.
And I was like, wait, so they literally get so uncomfortable, they have to evolve? Okay. Well, maybe we should all be lobsters.
But you know what? I think we should. But you know what? We all get uncomfortable, but we don't all evolve.
No, 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 we don't.
That's the thing. We don't all evolve.
What do you think is the difference between, you know, the people, that's the real inspiration for why I'm doing this. I want to know why people like you manage to evolve. What are they saying to themselves that the people who choose not to are not saying?
I believe that it's naturally in me. I don't know that it's something that, I mean, I guess you can grow into it.
Mm-hmm.
I would say I've always been this way.
Really? Okay. So since you were little.
Yes, I think from the time I was little, somehow I knew that I was different.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't mind being different.
Mm-hmm.
So whereas most people want to fit in,
mm-hmm.
I never wanted to fit in.
So if you were in one of those situations back then or now where everyone's sort of homogenous and you're, you know, the bright pink, you know, in the room full of black and white, what were you saying to yourself when that happened? Was it like, I don't like them, I like me? Like, what were you saying?
I wasn't saying a lot, but I was quietly observing to see, like, I used to call myself a quiet observer.
Okay.
Quiet anymore, but I was most of my years I've been a quiet observer. So okay. I didn't mind being in the room looking different. But if you talk to people that know me, they'll say, you weren't quiet. But I think I was quiet because I
was it was relative.
I just liked observing people and watching and trying to figure out what made them tick. Why they did what they did and why they wanted to be like everybody else. So if everybody was wearing, like, I literally could think of this dance I went to in college, and it was like a formal, and it was like black tie. So, you know, half the time the women are wearing black dresses. I found a burgundy dress. I was like,
I love that color.
And I still have an old picture in that dress. I always was like that. So, I mean, I think people can learn to be that way, but mm-hmm. they have to. I almost think something has to happen in your life to push you into changing.
A major event. Yeah.
Yes.
A major growth event.
Actually, today I was walking and I was listening to a podcast, and the guy was talking about when you hit rock bottom, you have nowhere else to go but up.
Mm-hmm.
Think about some of my story. I've been at rock bottom multiple times. I didn't even tell you at one point we were homeless.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
We lived in a motel, four kids and my mom in a motel.
How long were you homeless?
About 6-7 months. And I wasn't that young. I was like in the ninth grade, maybe. So I remember ninth or 10th grade. So I remember very clearly. But those rock bottom moments have helped me to get to where I am and become the person that I am, and to show me that I can survive. I know how to survive.
Yeah, you know, and you have proven it.
Yeah, I say I'm a survivor and a hustler. And not a hustler like I hustle people. I know how to jump in and get it done.
In Hebrew, my mom used to say it. I don't know if it applies to hustling the way you're describing, but she would use the phrase when it had to do with anything in the kitchen with cooking. She would say zriza. Don't ask me to spell it. But basically, like, when she was moving in the kitchen and she had her flow, it was boom, 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 stay out of my way. And she'd be done with something so fast and it would look so gorgeous. And I picked it up. It's a skill that I got from her. And so when she passed and I would cook for my father and my sister, my dad would like look at me and go, you got your mom, you know, Adzriza. Wow, Ezeyofi, Adzriza. And I feel like that's a type of hustling.
Yes, it is. And that's me to a T. You could bring me in your kitchen. I wouldn't care what was in there. I could find something to cook.
You're resourceful, and you're willing to step into the new brave new world instead of step away.
Totally.
I love that. Oh my gosh, we need more courage like that in the world. And that's why you're helping so many people, because you're putting yourself out there, which is a scary thing to do in general.
It is, believe me. I get scared too, but I don't let that stop me.
You hear that? So she gets scared. She is a human. She's not like, you know, a superhero mutant person, but she actually is human and gets scared too. We all do. Who was it that said, if you're scared, do it anyway? I don't remember. I can't remember the quote.
Feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah, feel the fear and do it anyway.
Jeffers, her name
yes.
is Susan Jeffers, wrote this book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway.
But that's the advice. It's hard. It's a simple sentence, and it's a lifetime of work, but it's true.
But when you feel afraid and you do it anyway, you build self-respect.
I'm gonna sit with that for a second. Say that one more time.
When you're afraid and you do it anyway, you build self-respect and self-trust, but self-respect.
Can you say more words about that? I love that.
It's almost like you're doing something good for yourself. Because most of the time we're only afraid because we haven't done it before.
Mm-hmm.
So if you stop yourself from doing it, then you lose respect for yourself when you keep holding yourself back and you regret holding yourself back.
Yes.
But if you just step over the line, this is literally like stepping to the other side of the line to mm-hmm. do the scary thing. You can straddle, but at some point you got to say, either I'm going to stay in the comfort zone or I'm going to do it afraid. Mm-hmm. And when you stay in the comfort zone, it is uncomfortable. The comfort zone is uncomfortable. There's nothing great about the comfort zone.
No, it's an itchy sweater.
Yeah.
It's an itchy sweater. And you know what's so funny is you're literally painting this verbal picture for me, and I'm visualizing myself stepping over what appears to be a cliff, right? To jump into something terrifying. And then inevitably, every single time I do, I take that step and I go, wait, that's all? That's
right.
All I was afraid of? Are you kidding? Oh my gosh. I've been scared this whole time. What a waste of my time.
Totally. Well, you know the phrase catastrophize. People, everything is a catastrophe. Like, oh my God, if that happened to me, and I've had people say to me, like, about my story, oh my God, if that happened to me, I'd be dead.
Yeah.
How did you do it?
Yeah.
It's like, I'm still here to tell the story. You would not die.
But that's what they're doing. They're casting a spell on themselves immediately. Yeah. And saying it's impossible from the get-go. Even the idea of the possibility is impossible. And that's the spell that they've cast.
Totally.
And you are literally casting a totally different spell and saying, no, actually, not only can I do this, but I'm going to, and I'm going to be successful. The end.
Totally.
I just love it.
And you look scared because like you said, 99.9% of the time when you do it, you're like, that's all you got for me?
Yep. It turns out to be a molehill and not a mountain.
Mm-hmm. Totally. There aren't that many mountains in life. I mean, now, of course, if you get a terminal illness or something like that, that's a mountain.
Yeah.
But a lot of the stuff that we deal with, they're not mountains, they're molehills.
There are very few mountains in life. I'm writing that one down.
Yeah, there aren't.
Oh my gosh, I love it. Most of them are molehills.
In our mind. It's a mountain in our mind, right?
Yep. No, it's true. It's a mountain in our mind. Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, I got to tell you, this has been so damn enjoyable. You are like the coolest, most colorful onion I've ever seen. And I wish I had 14 more hours to peel back these layers, but we both have a life. So I am going to thank you again so much. I want to just repeat back some of these amazing spells that Gail Keyes Allen just cast on me right now. She reminded me that sometimes we lose friends on the journey up the real mountain, and that that's okay. And that if we ever wonder, we should always use our past as evidence to know that we can survive and overcome. And I know it's not yours, but I'm using it anyway. Success is built on a pile of failures, and that there are very few mountains, and most of them are molehills. And they're really just mountains in our minds. So get to step it.
Yes. Yes.
I love it. Oh, what incredible magic. Thank you so much, Gail. And please know you can come back anytime to inspire this amazing audience. Tell folks how they can get a hold of you. I know there's women out there listening right now that are ready to dive in and fall in love with themselves and become the hustlers and get their business going. How do they find you?
Yeah, they can find me on Instagram, my name, Gail Keyes Allen, or LinkedIn or Facebook. I'm working on my website right now, so it's being reimagined.
Beautiful. Okay, so I'm going to put the link to Gail's social in the show notes, and my information also in the show notes if you need it. And again, I just want to thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Keep listening, everybody. We are casting the best kind of spells. And I want to thank you all for being here. Have a great day. I hope you enjoyed the episode. I hope that you'll like, share, and subscribe to the podcast. I'm on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, as well as a YouTube channel called Betterment Life Coaching with Na'ama. I love helping my Jewish clients transform their lives by changing their language. Change your words, change your world. So if you feel like this is for you, please connect with me. Go to www.naamasagal.com and click the button that says book a discovery call free. I would love to get to know you, and you can join one of my challenges or my group coaching, or we can set up a one-on-one. I look forward to connecting. Thanks so much.